Welcome to Regenerative Spaces, a podcast that explores holistic and sustainable paths toward thriving in the fields of agriculture, education, spirituality, and beyond. Hey there, and welcome to Regenerative Spaces. I'm your host, Stacy Pellice. I'm a regenerative farmer in Santa Barbara, California, but my background and interests span a much broader range of fields, from psychology to spirituality and beyond. In my 3+ decades as an environmental activist, author, and educator, I've gotten increasingly curious about the links between the various ecosystems humans occupy. On this podcast, I'm inviting you to get curious with me. These episodes feature approachable conversations with inspiring experts in different disciplines, from intuitive healers, nonprofit founders, activists, and educators. We'll cover county politics, cattle ranching, and a whole world of other specialties in between. These folks are all at the forefront of their chosen fields, and each one offers a unique perspective on holistic, sustainable, and regenerative possibilities for our individual and collective lives. I'm thrilled to introduce today's guest, Prune Harris, an energy expert, consciousness educator, and soul activist. Trust me when I say she's the real deal. Recently, I had the privilege of attending one of Prune's multi-day workshops, and let me tell you, it was a game changer. Her insights into the energy within and around us opened my eyes to new practices and perspectives, and I'm excited for you to experience her wisdom too. From childhood, Prune has perceived energy as vibrant hues, pulsating vibrations, and intricate patterns. But it wasn't until her mid-30s that she realized not everyone sees the world as she does. Her path has taken her across the globe, learning from healers, elders, and wisdom keepers from diverse backgrounds. With certifications in Touch for Health Kinesiology, Eden Energy Medicine, and even Celtic and Norse shamanism, Prune's expertise knows no bounds. I guarantee you'll be as blown away by Prune's story as I was. She's incredibly generous in sharing her gifts, and I am beyond grateful to have her on the show. So let's dive into this transformative conversation with the one and only Prune Harris. Hello, Prune. How are you today? Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Stacey. I am fabulous today. I'm here in Cornwall in the UK and spring is arriving. It feels awesome. So yeah, I feel really good today. Thank you.
Oh, goodness. Well, thanks for coming all the way from Cornwall. So I want to share a little bit of how I met you. Our mutual friend, Jennifer Freed, told me she's met this amazing woman who does energy work and teaches and all this. I mean, at first it was just, you just have to go there. And so my first introduction was through your book, Your Radiant Soul. And what I found was this very unique way that you can speak through a book. The color, the large letters, the quotes, that you just came at me through the book. I want to say that was my first experience. And then luck would have it, you came to Santa Barbara and did a 2-day full workshop and you stayed here on the ranch. And so I was able to get to know you and your work better. And I have to say, it really rocked my world. And so that's how we met. And I have since really been able to dive in to your very generous offerings online, like, and we'll get into that later, but I just wanted to tell people how we met. And I'm so thrilled to know you, like literally, because you are, you answer just so many questions that I have that aren't available in the mainstream for me.
Thanks for saying that, Stacey. Yeah. It was a beautiful experience to come to California and stay and witness the really amazing work that you're doing. That's big work. It's interesting, isn't it, when you have something as impassioned and profound as you're working with your ranch there, how that lights up and brings your own bigness of being into a whole different arena. You're concentrating on healing, on regenerating a small part of the world, a very, very, very small part of the world, even though the ranch is big. And actually the ripples of that come out through this podcast to all over the world, and the sacred ripples, the energetic ripples of that spread out throughout the entire cosmos. So wow, it was such a joy to be there with you and get to even kind of walk on the land that you are stewarding so deeply, be with you and your family and hearing kind of how it came into being. And yeah, what a treat for me. So I'm delighted that we get to further it with chatting here as well.
Yeah, and I get to share you with listeners. This is so good. Well, that's such a perfect example and you pointing out how everything we do matters. All of our energy, all of our intentions, all of our actions, everything actually does matter. And that's one of the biggest shifts that you've provided me with. As much as I would wish that be true, you're here to tell us that that is true. And so I really appreciate that.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? One of the biggest tenets of my work is don't believe anyone in anything. Go and experience it yourself. Don't take another person's word as truth. Go and experience your own truth. But because I've been able to see energy since I was born, because I've spent 20 years in private practice really helping teach students, clients, how to understand their energy. And my understanding is that when we can understand our own energy systems, we feel deeply empowered because we understand how we are connected into every single part of the cosmos. We are created by it and we co-create it. So then any action, any thought, any feeling, any word, they are all energetic forms. And sometimes I can feel a bit heavy, eh? You know, have you had any thoughts today, Stacey, that weren't in their biggest magnificence? I'm sure you have. I'm sure I have too. But when we can bring more and more consciousness to understanding the way that everything we are impacts everything there is, then rather than it feel heavy, I've experienced in myself and in hundreds of thousands of people now that they feel the freedom, the empowerment in that as an understanding. That actually, by us being conscious of our own vibration, of the way that we are one essential thread in this great web of life, by us understanding that and choosing what kind of vibration we want to be. Do we want to be a tight survival kind of vibration in that world? Do we want to be regenerative? Do we want to be joyful? How do we choose to be? And then how do we understand how to bring that balance so that we can beat that vibration out into the world? That's the kind of essence, isn't it? And we are all aware of that. We all do it at a certain level. And I think the central to my understanding of energy, having watched it now for 50 years, is that we are so powerful to be that vibration that we wish to see, not only in our own lives, but in the world. Right now, we're in some challenging times, aren't we? And there's not a place that we look at that doesn't have challenge. And that can make us feel so lacking in hope, so lacking in power and energy. And the meet point of both the work that you're doing and the work that I'm doing is that, wow, we can inspire hope in ourselves and we can activate it by sharing stories, by sharing knowledge around the world.
Right. Oh my gosh, that is such a beautiful frame for this work. And I want to say, so that one essential thread, that frame I can work with, but I feel that, you know, you could trace it back to religions or cultures or whatnot that would say, who do you think you are? You know, and that's, I mean, we're all somewhat educated and raised with this notion. And yet, something that I have in my own notes from your workshop, selfishness is essential to healing the world, and that self-care heals the world. To me, it rings true to something I literally heard in my ear shortly after I had come back to the ranch after having had a near-death experience, a liver failure. I heard climate change is an inside job. And I didn't know what that meant at first, but I ended up really understanding it to mean my own self-healing is my first job. That's all I can do. And that from there, it emanates out rather than thinking we have to start somewhere out there with someone else, with something else. So help us understand that, and how can we square that with maybe the way our culture would have us view our own divinity, our own role in the big picture.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful phrase, isn't it? Say it again, Stacey. Climate.
What I heard was climate change is an inside job.
Yeah, climate change is an inside job. I couldn't agree more. I think
it came with slang. It came in a slang term. You know, it's so funny. You never know how it's going to come.
Yeah, but so fabulous. And so, like, unpackable, isn't it? It's easy. We can grab that. And I would say that every change, not just climate change, but every change is an inside job. So when I think about the way that our culture really kind of predisposes us, and I'm going to say especially as women inside the legacy of the patriarchy, and I perfectly understand that the patriarchy in all of its legacy is deeply impactful on every gender, every individual that doesn't identify as a gender, but the patterns as they've been set up have been that we as individuals sacrifice ourselves for the benefit of other individuals. And actually, when we understand, as most, in fact, one could say all ancient cultures understood, that we are deeply interconnected, that there is nothing that occurs. So now we're going back into some of the mystic Christian traditions, those places underneath the structures that the patriarchy brought forward. We've been living for 2,000 years, maybe more, in systems that looked at dominance over, control over something, someone else, Mother Earth, our amazing planet, as resources to use, to control. And what's essential with regenerative understandings is, that's kind of a very linear mindset of what is occurring, and it misses the great big picture that we are symbiotic, that we're actually, for us as humans to thrive, every other species has to be in a place of being able to thrive as well. Our planet as an organism of which we are deeply enmeshed within, that has to thrive as well. So when we come back to this concept that indigenous communities and all mystic traditions have had across the world, then the understanding there is that we are all connected. And so from there, we can understand that my health, my happiness, my capacity to be me is going to impact greatly how I can interact with you, how I can interact with my relationships, how I'm going to interact with my community, my society, my country, the piece of land or the house I live in. So if we kind of flip the concept on the head a minute, that selfishness is a good thing or a bad thing, Selfishness isn't the right word. That's the challenge. That's where we kind of keep hitting. We can use the words like self-worth and self-esteem, but they mean
self-love.
Something a little, self-love. Yeah. But they all mean something a little different from the opposite of selfishness, don't they? And we don't have a word in our English language that houses this. Maybe some of your listeners have a word in other languages and they'll share it with us. But in the English language, we have words to embody, to help us understand, explain, to contain the energy of our self-love, self-worth, self-esteem, but not that concept of actually ensuring that you as an embodied soul are in your fullness. And that's where I said that selfishness, I don't mean against other people, but I mean selfishness in the way that we tend to ourselves with the same amount of care, compassion, love, attention, generosity, as we would care for anybody else. That's the definition of selfishness that I'm talking about. So if we can put ourselves into that place where we recognize that by choosing to be that radiant vibration, by choosing to be that healthy, vibrant, empowered, hopeful vibration, we can impact everything and everyone around us. Because what happens is that's a birthright, eh? It's a birthright that every being experiences, that natural, abundant vitality. And that's not to say there won't be challenges at times. Challenges are part of growth. Challenges are part of experiencing that abundant vitality. But when we can have as a concept that for us to be in that place of our birthright, to be us, to be those emerging souls, those becoming beings, human beings, yeah? That's a key word, human beings. We're here to be. Yeah. We're not human doings. We're human beings. Yeah. So if we're here to be ourselves in our deep authenticity, in our place of authentic being, then we can do consciously. So authentic being, conscious doing, with ourselves as the center, tending to ourselves, just like you tend to your beautiful land, you tend to your trees, you tend to the water. Mm-hmm. Are you tending to yourself in exactly the same way? Because if you're not, then there's a place within the ranch interrelational dynamics that's a little bit out of balance, yeah? Mm-hmm. So that concept of tending, I think, is a really beautiful one when we think about how selfishness can be beneficial, because it's a word that means something very different, doesn't it? So how can we flip it on its head? How can we stretch the perimeters of our awareness of how kind we can be to ourselves and why it's so important?
Yes, that's so well said. And it ties to, so I have studied a lot of Taoism to date. And so I keep noticing ways that this, your collective understanding of energy, you're an energy expert. So that means you've taken a lot of different, you've studied a lot of different paths, and many of them echo one another, I would say, in terms of how you talk about it, which I love. But one of my teachers says, energy is contagious. How would you like to infect people today? I think that also says it. But you speak to something about, like, if I'm given a day, how do I want to spend my time? How do, you know, spending time, that's a whole interesting, tricky area for me. And productivity, and what am I going to get done today? Mm-hmm. And even though I study these concepts every day, it's still, there's that productivity thought. And the idea of, I feel more satisfied, more settled, and more grounded in my life, which gives my, let's call it, you know, productivity a different quality. What I do, so in Taoism, it would be the Tao would be that unseen energetic potential, and the day would be that manifestation, that action that you take. And you can't have one without the other, and one informs the other. So are those parallel concepts to what you're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that our definition of productivity as a culture is incredibly limited. So you're talking about those measurable outcomes of, good, I've recorded this, or I've planted that, or I've read this, or I've written this, and those are what our culture values, things that we can tick off, things that we can say, oh, I did well today. What about the value of kindness? If you have been kind to someone, let's say you've gone to the supermarket and you've been and you've bumped into someone and you've started a conversation and you've spent 30 minutes sharing kindness with somebody. Is that on your productivity list? Have you checked it off? And I think it's those we're still in so many ways programmed. I would say that program's held in your energy, held in your neurology, held in your nervous system. We're programmed to think of productivity in a very narrow definition of the word. For me, I shared with you just before we started this podcast that I've had two deaths in my family recently, one just yesterday. And so for me, when I woke up this morning, the first thing I did after lying in bed and doing my little dreaming and thinking and feeling into myself, connecting a couple of practices, exercises, holds that kind of balance my energy, then I came downstairs and I went to my sacred space, an altar space, where I have some candles and a few other things that are important to me. And I was there probably only for about 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. And I just put a picture of the aunt that's died on that space. And I lit the candles. And I spoke words of blessing for her life. I thought of my dad, her brother, who died last year. And I prayed for him. And I'm really standing there, experienced, remembered, recalled, connected to the deep joy of that particular woman. I said prayers of blessing for her transition. And then I blew out the candle and I moved away. Would that have made a productivity list? It's definitely, even despite having the joy of this podcast, it's definitely the single most important thing I will do today. Without any doubt, I sent a ripple of prayer, blessing, connection, love through the cosmos to aid the transition of a recently transitioned soul. Powerful work, beautiful work, gentle work, joyful work. I look forward to a productivity list that we all hold, where kindness, being able to contact that kind of what I call the daily sacred, just having tiny sacred practices that change everything about our personal energy and the way we experience the world.
Yeah.
We have three levels, as you'll know from your beautiful work and research in your life, of the physical, the, we could say, the mind, and then the soul. We could put those across all healing traditions. We've got those three understandings. They might have slightly different words, but those are the three vibrational changes. And for the biggest impact in our healing, healing of ourselves, healing of our families, healing of the world, then working at the sacred level is always the most profound. So that's the place I would love those productivities. You going for a walk, taking 2 hours out of your to-do list to go for a walk and really connect into your land. Nourish it through your feet with every step. Give gratitude for it. Notice, pay attention, listen. What's the land asking of you? And I know you do all of this. But that may not make the to-do list. Or if it does, it gets put into 20 minutes because actually you've got to do this and you're meeting that person, you've got to do that. And we all have these busy lives. But can we land the daily sacred in ways that enhance everything about our experiencing of this world as the amazing souls that each of us are?
Wow. See how you are? You just make it seem so clear. I mean, how can I not agree with absolutely everything you said? I mean, I'm thinking of times I've run into a friend and had a coffee impromptu and had that deep connection. And there is a sweetness and a satisfaction and a depth that carries me. And it literally lends me this quality that I cannot get by checking off actually things I can point to necessarily, you know, meaning those that I can see, feel, touch, taste, you know, those are those to-dos. Often you can point to them. So you're naming that and the word sacred and also time. So because I don't understand time the way our culture does, I never have been able to really grasp it. Me and the clock are a little bit at odds. And so that I realized at one point, I really require about 3 hours. I think I was backlogged. I think 2 hours is my basic. I think I was backlogged and it was 3 hours at one point of sacred time in my day to feel that I'm where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And the blessing of Taoism is that what they will look at is that balancing the yin and the yang, so that if you're going to do an equal amount of action, thinking, manifestation, doing, you need an equal amount of nourishing, resting, holding. And if we sleep 8 hours and we eat and do things like that, that are nourishing ourselves for, you know, a little bit of time, you need another 2 hours in your day to balance that. Or rather, yeah, so it's 12 and 12 rather. So in order to come up with that 12, you need to find another 2 hours besides your 8 hours of sleep and 2 hours of eating that are going to replenish and create that balance. So there's a calculus for you that really can help us out. But
I
I'm
love
wondering,
that,
so,
Stacey.
But okay, so for me, I also struggle, and maybe some others do, with this notion of, is this woo-woo? Is this real? Or is this science? And something I really appreciate about your book is you have a number of quotes by Einstein, who is one of my big heroes. And it's amazing talking about energy, spirit, soul, and matter and that relationship. But is it science or is it woo-woo? And I feel like you really handle it well in both ways. Like, yes, it's mystical, it's sacred. But those of us who maybe haven't taken that step, because I've been shy to be, you know, maybe out of the closet in my past about this is real for me. This is how I experience it. And the way you talk about the way we are in the world is through energy. That is how we experience the world. So why wouldn't that be primary to our conversation?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm glad that Einstein has given us all of these amazing insights and understandings that we can in some way marry up what traditions for thousands and thousands of years before Einstein knew at a different level of scientific knowing. You know, again, we're coming up against this wall or limited definition, aren't we, Stacey, of what science is. Our modern understanding is that science is something that can be proven, and that actually the proof isn't in the experiencing. The proof is in the theory being valid. So that takes away that place of direct experiencing. When I worked in my clinical practice, it was always that interesting place of really following the evidence-based guidelines for practices. Very important, very important. But for me, half the picture, because the other half of the picture is the practice-based evidence. If I've had 500 women present to my clinic, all with, let's say, menopause challenges, and we've done some healing work, I've taught them practices that can change their energy, and they all recover, or 50% or 80% or whatever it is, find their way into balance and their hormones respond, then for me, that's practice-based evidence, absolutely equal to anything that our modern scientific understandings can validate or bring forward. And again, it's that place of a limited definition, isn't it? So absolutely, it's massively woo-woo. Okay. It is about understanding our energy. But you know where I always come back to? Anytime there's this place, and as you can imagine in my life, I've met some people who are fierce advocates of everything practical, known, and scientific. And so then suddenly they're in a conversation with me and feeling the need to mock or defend or try and make me understand or explain differently. And what I learned probably in my 30s was simply to speak my truth and watch in their energy system as the truth landed. Because truth knows truth, exactly like kindness knows kindness and love knows love. So for me, as I now walk my path in my life, I speak what is true to me. And it resonates with all of us because it is an energetic truth. Your energy system knows that your energy fields are fields of consciousness. Yeah, right at the very, very core of your system is your soul energy. And then that radiates out through every single cell beyond your physicality into your biofield or aura, and hopefully gets beautifully contained by the auric membrane, which also protects you from the external world and connects you to it. So you have this beautiful, beautiful dynamic exchange of fields of information. That's all energy is, fields or waves of information. So when you, as a conscious field of information, hear something that's true or say something that's true, your vitality and your radiance flows freely. When you hear something that's true, untrue, or say something that's untrue, then parts of your beautiful energy fields move out of flow, out of balance. And so I always feel like even when I'm speaking to the most cynical or skeptic person, that's totally fine. I'm going to share my truth. They're going to share theirs. And somewhere in that rich meeting point between their perspective and my perspective, we're going to get curious. We're going to be able to expand the potential for each of us. So I have zero doubt in my mind, having watched energy. I think that's the difference, isn't it? For me, energy isn't theory. It's not something that has to be proven. I can see the way that every time you catch on to something I'm saying and you're thinking it, how your energy changes. The places where it grabs your heart and sends energy up to your brain because you're capturing a thought to say, I want to respond to this, or I want to pick up on this. Mm-hmm. I can see in people when they're in relationship, when they're holding places of balance, unbalance, health, illness. So I don't have to kind of second guess it. I have trained with amazing, amazing healers and leaders in that field in the world because I wanted to understand the language. I wanted to be able to share the language in the most accessible ways. But I've never learned anything that I couldn't already see because it doesn't exist. No matter what traditions we're working with, energy is energy is energy. So it's that beautiful place of now just being excited to share the understandings.
You know, it seems to me, so you're talking about valuing your own subjective knowing. And education is an area that I've spent a lot of time. My dissertation, I was looking at students' well-being in schools, and went on to talk about, to interview teachers. And that feeling safe, feeling loved, feeling connected, feeling in community, sharing a joint sense of belonging, and feeling a sense of choice ended up being what made all the difference in actually learning and actually engaging and having self-motivation and self-esteem increase through the process. And you say feeling safe allows our deepest selves to flow freely. And I wonder if, I mean, children know this. They know what feels good, what doesn't feel good. It's a yes or a no, or they're curious, or they're repulsed, or, but many of us have lost touch with that, those knowings, and we've been actually educated out of that. It's like, I might say to when I was a child that, oh, that neighbor, that's a yucky neighbor or something, and I was punished for it. And actually all I was doing was speaking to an energy. And so over time, I learned not to trust, not to talk about, not to listen. But can we all regain that sense? You are able to see energy, and other people are as well. Some people feel energy. I don't know what other senses there are that people can experience. I mean, taste. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other experiences, but can we all learn this? I mean, are we all born with it? Did some of us forget? And can we all come back to it through some of these exercises and processes that we'll talk about in a little minute? Can we all
get
there? Yes,
I love that, and love what you bring forward as far as the what young people and all ages need to thrive, whether they're thriving in learning, thriving in business, thriving in their workplace, thriving as carers, thriving across all places, because it's the same, isn't it? Everything that you cited there is exactly the same for us as beings able to thrive in our own life. So yes, I feel very confident that every single one of us is born deeply perceiving energy. We are energetic beings. So I know that we have created big civilizations that would remove us from the animal kingdom and the animal realm, but we are still animals, and our energy systems are the same as animals, sometimes with different levels of consciousness, or consciousness that moves in different ways, depending on what animal I'm looking at. But we are all energetic beings. It's our natural language. And like you exactly pointed to, that language has been disrupted. We no longer have the words. You weren't able to be encouraged by your parents, by your schooling, by your family, to keep that awareness alive. But it is simply a case of remembering what you have always known. And I mean, let's think about some 80s cop movie out of New York. the hero will solve the case because of a hunch. Now, a hunch is not scientific. A hunch can never be proven or put on a to-do list, yeah? But that hunch was that intuitive, instinctive way of knowing. How many times have you or our listeners gone to pick up the phone to call someone, only to find that that phone rings with the very person they were going to call? Or you wake up in the morning and you think, oh, I had a dream about such and such, and you get a text from them that day. You know, all of these places, we could use the word synchronicity, but all of these places of energetic connection. And we have, for every sense, we have a way of knowing. So I've taught perception to hundreds of students now, and all of us can perceive through all our senses. So I've mentioned that place of sight, which would be known as clair clairvoyance, clear seeing, or the place of just knowing, claircognizance, where we just kind of know something about someone. Very, very common, because we do value the cognitional processes. So as long as it hasn't been trained out of you to utterly dismiss what you deeply, instinctively know, unless it can be proven or read in a book, then that place of claircognizance. We've got clairsentience, the place of feeling. Do you, or how many people listening now, maybe they're sitting with a friend and they get, oh, you know, I've just got that sense in my own body of grief, or my back's a bit achy. How are you doing? And the friend says, oh yeah, my back's been sore for a few days now. So that place where our body mirrors what's going on in front of us, clairsentience, we feel things. And then there's clairalliance and gustance, clear hearing, clear tasting. Many people smell cancer. They smell that specific energy that they know from experiencing a beloved with cancer or working on cancer wards. So all of these are utterly normal, utterly natural ways of perceiving energy, perceiving those waves of information that are always, I would say the word, if it's not too woo-woo, say that they're encoded. They're encoded on every wave within the cosmos, these places of information that we can tap into or not, depending on our ability to perceive them.
Now, I think that sounds sciencey, the encoded part. And the other thing is things that are preposterous to our logical minds, like time travel, are calculatable mathematically. There's a lot of these things are already proven. And that's why I love that you bring Einstein in, because he, you know, he brought a lot of this stuff to us, but it is actually provable. And so in the science and the mathematics way. So, and yet I say this all the time, it's like every 10 years, Scientific American has a cover issue on, you know, quantum physics is real, or, you know, Einstein's theories. Because we can't somehow wrap our heads around it. But my fantasy hearing you talk is that we educate children. They already get this stuff. And so let's educate children on our own energy bodies, our own systems, and how to mind them. And so it reminds me of a concept. It was, you know, there was a few myth bustings that you did during this workshop. One of them had to do with this quality of empathy, or like when you feel other people, because I have had that experience where, oh gosh, my shoulder's killing me, only to find out, oh wait, it's somebody else's shoulder. Or it might be a mood. It's like, oh, why do I suddenly feel like this? And I've learned to check. And it's taken me a long time. But so that idea of that I do feel other people, but you demonstrated beautifully this notion of having empathy sometimes can be a hole in one's auric membrane, and how imperative it is to have that intact. What the aura is, what an auric membrane is. Could you inform us a little bit about that? Because I think it's really important. As well as the myth of needing sort of like a protective shield when you step out into a large group or a huge concert or something like that. People like me, tell us about how that really works as far as your
fabulous
and knowledge. Yeah.
Well, from the energetic perspective, there are two words, two concepts at the moment that are, you know, they're really hot buzzwords because they're beginning to bring forward some big understandings. And that would be the concept of someone being highly sensitive and the concept of someone being an empath. Now, that's slightly different from the emotion or the experience of empathy, because empathy is that beautiful understanding of being able to imagine and therefore understand what another person is experiencing. Well, when we talk about being an empath, it's actually that place, not just of imagining or understanding from that ability for us to connect into an experience that we've had that's similar, but being an empath energetically means that your system is picking up on that information that someone else is currently processing, experiencing, and experiencing it as well. And that's also the place of someone who's highly sensitive. That may be even way beyond the place of physical experiencing or experiencing what another human being. That's that place of being really sensitive to lights, to noise, perhaps very sensitive to what you can eat and what you can't eat. So it's the place of your energy system and being in a place of, well, let's just use the word extremes. It's not serving you as you being your amazing, radiant being. It's moved into a place of actually no longer being in service to your own becoming, because it's being compromised by other experiences. Oh. Now, there are many, many, many reasons for that. We are electromagnetic, energetic beings, as well as subtle energy beings. So when we think of the scientific and the non-scientific, which I would call the wisdom ways of knowing, so scientific ways of knowing and wisdom ways of knowing.
I like that.
And there is always that big, wild wisdom inside every one of us. So when we think about the understandings of our energy system, much of it can be scientifically proven. Things like the flow of electromagnetic energy through your cells, through your entire body system. When we work with things like ECGs or ECKs, I think different countries, different words for your heart, measuring the electromagnetic output of your heart. When we work with MRIs, the magnetic resonance imagery, then we're working with the electromagnetic energy of the body system. So our science very, very much not only acknowledges, but works with and brings forward in big healing ways the understanding of the electromagnetic energy of our body. But we also have a subtle energy. And when I'm talking about the radiant soul energy and our soul energy, that subtle, which simply means it's not measurable yet. I look forward to a time where our science can support it. So much of the ancient healing traditions are being validated, and it's like our modern science is catching up on it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So when we come to that concept of being an empath or being highly sensitive, then it's the place that our energy system is not holding our own containment. It's not being able to say, that Stacey stuff that I'm picking up on, and I can honor and respect that, but I don't have to experience it. Or, okay, these lights are pretty intense. They're strong strobe lights at a concert or whatever it is. But my energy system can meet it and protect me from the penetrative aspect of it. So one of the things I love teaching about energy, and it kind of comes back to what you were talking about, the measurables of the balance of yin and yang, and how if we get 8 hours sleep, then we still need an additional 2 hours of nourishing practice. For me, in our lives nowadays, what I encourage is that rather than thinking of a two-hour chunk, we are so aware of our own flow, when it goes out of balance, when we move into stress, that we're able to bring in those small shifts in consciousness. The small shifts may be supported by a practice as simple as two hands on the heart or one hand on the top of the head, just simple ways that give a very immediate message to your energy system to coalesce, to regroup, to reform back into balance. And when we're able to just do those little tweaks on our energy, then we're able to really continually be in that place of, well, I would call it the creative energy field rather than the habitual energy field that can lock us down. So we've got these two potentials, and we can correlate that to the sympathetic and sympathetic nervous system when we're kind of locked into the habitual energy field or fight, flight, and freeze, and the parasympathetic, which is this much more expansive, connective, creative, and responsive way of being. So your system, my system, every single human system is designed to be in that creative flow and only to come into the habitual when our life is in danger and we literally need to run away from that saber-toothed tiger or whatever it is that we need to do, or when we're really tired. And it's then designed to come into the habitual energy field so we feel tired and go into sleep in order to restore, to come back into that creative process. So when we think about the fact that many of us, we might even say most of us, it pains my heart to say it, but I'm going to say it. When we think of the 7 billion people walking today, and especially those in modern societies, most people are in their habitual energy field. They're in that place of the sympathetic nervous system. They are experiencing stress. And from that place, then your energy field, your aura, is moving into places of survival instead of the potential of thriving. So from that place of survival, one of the places that can quite quickly, as a habit, as an old pattern, move into problems is your aura, which now means that this incredible biofield that should be emanating out from every single one of your cells in this powerful electromagnetic energy to keep you cocooned in balance, cocooned in flow and cohesiveness, empower you to connect wisely with other people, places, beings, but also act as a protection from energies that don't need to come in to your own personal. Think about your energy field as being a field. Every one of your energy systems is in service to you becoming. And by that, I mean your soul expression to be enhanced a little more every moment of your life. That's what I mean in that place of becoming. So everything about you is in order to enable, to nurture your becoming. But if we're in this habitual way of being, if we're essentially, we've got kind of glitches in our energetic software, which keep pulling us back into old ways of being, old habits. We can think of those neurological pathways of strain, of stress, of shadow, the places that we had to begin to operate from because we moved into a survival technique, which then just became stuck. It became a habit in our system. So from that place, we're now stuck in these kind of habits. And we all know those, eh, Stacey? Even having done lots of work on shadow, I know you know the stuckness of old limiting patterns, and so do I. Right. So when we're able then to work with bringing our energy back into balance, it means that the biofield can resonate again. We can get that energy coming out of our cells, which means that your aura begins to be much more essential, vibrant, healthy. And in doing so, the auric membrane, this amazing kind of, think of the membrane as the skin, just like your body has skin, your aura has a skin. And it's that skin that keeps you, you amazingly contained and connective. It's kind of a paradox that we have to play with when we think about the way energy works. It's always in service of ourselves as part of a much bigger energy. All right, I'm going to stop there, Stacey. That was a lot of words.
Well, no, it was beautiful because you painted an incredible picture for me. Having studied, you know, your work and other people's work, I've come close to some of these ideas, but what you're talking about, and one of the most interesting titles I've seen that you carry is soul activist. And it's like, huh, what's that? And you've just really sort of unpacked that notion. And what I'm understanding is this idea, I've heard this from, you know, Plato, Michael Mead, James Hillman talk about one's genius. So each of us is that acorn that has a potential to become, and really the entire world is best off when we each become our fullest selves, is what I understand. So that there's huge consequences in not understanding that, in not engaging our own authentic energy system, seeing it as our, not a divine right, yes it is, but also it's my reason for being. So take my own ego out of it and just say, my whole reason for being here is to manifest Stacy, and in the best way possible. And so what I think I'm understanding is really through a number of you've given us a lot of specific practices we can do that is to keep the fullness in my heart, in my cells, in my aura, as well as in that membrane, which I really wasn't aware of until I started working with you. But that is the approach rather than, well, I'm going to do this work to fill myself up and then I have to guard up when I go outside. It's a nice to get to thing to manifest my soul's purpose or my heart's desire. Mm. No, it's not nice to get to. It's what you're here for. And so really you may not see the path right this second to how I'm going to get this cockamamie idea. Even this building I'm in came in a dream. How's that going to happen? The dream told me it's going to be part of a nonprofit Wisdom of the Fool. What? Well, guess what? You stay with that dreams and what the soul's communicating and things end up finding a way. So that's, to me, is my version of what you just described. Even if it doesn't make sense, you need to stay with whatever's coming through you. It's not, you didn't invent it. It's coming through you for the most part. Would you say that's kind of true? It's like we can, you know, sort of have a shared ownership of what wants to come through. You didn't wake up going, today I'm going to do this. It's like, it's you're here to bring this.
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Everything like that. I think it's a place of, we still are carrying a legacy of the story of separation, aren't we? The separation, you mentioned it before, as far as what right do we have to kind of claim our own divinity? We have this place of having fallen from grace. And of course, that's a very modern concept. It's only 2,000 years old. And before that point, there was a very different concept, is that we are actually the kind of stewards and caretakers and co-creators of how we experience the world in its physicality, as well as at all other layers of experiencing. So if I think about exactly that beautiful example you just gave, you are a very unique and magnificent soul, just as I am, just as every single other being is. You're there, you're lying in your bed, and you have a dream. As you lie in your bed, parts of your energy structure, as you stand, as you exist in every situation, parts of your energy structure are connecting you deep into the wisdom, the energy fields of the earth, and the wisdom and energy fields of the cosmos, place above our head and below our feet. They bring in those encoded information waves, let's put it in those terms. I sometimes think of them as filaments, like a superhighway of filaments of light right at our core. That's the place of our deep soul, our core soul energy. Now, is that exclusively you? Is it exclusively me? I'm going to say no. That at that place of our deepest core energy, we are being Well, we are housing some of the world soul and the wisdom and energy that moves through that. Then, at that deep core level, when our Daiji Pole or our Sushumna Nadi, many different traditions with different names for this central core energy, when that begins to radiate out through every pore in your body, now you've got a really contained aspect of radiant soul, of Stacy. But at that core level, you've got Stacy and the cosmos, Stacy and the earth beneath your feet. Now, if you lived continually from that place, you're going to be immense and majestic mystic, eh? Maybe not the most grounded or practical person. It comes back to you would be being and not really doing anything. But you don't. You've housed it. You are housed in a physical body with a beautifully contained energy field as well. So you're lying there. You're dreaming. Where is the information coming from? You're walking through the fields, you're thinking, where is the thought coming from? Like those amazing places of cosmic soul or world soul or the energy fields outside yourself communicating with the energy field of yourself and co-creating. And that then, if you can pay attention to that co-creation, if you can put your pretty much attention to any intention creates form. So there you are. You had this dream that brought forward something that you paid attention to. And at some point, it shuffled and shifted and processed through enough of your energy, enough of your thought and feeling processes until it became an intention. And from that place, everything about the world soul and everything about your individual soul aligned to bring it into being. That simple manifestation, eh? We create something that is bigger than ourselves. It comes from something inside and outside ourselves. We pay attention to it and we birth it into being. Fabulous. And you know, the kind of, I guess, sad truth of it is that collectively we do that all the time in the way that creates the kind of environment that we're currently living in. We feel things like, well, I can't do anything about climate change. Yes. Or what's the point in me recycling when I know these 25 hotels down the street don't recycle? There's no point. So we bring exactly the same place. We have something we give our attention to, and we choose not to act. We choose to bring our intention of defeat or hopelessness. And that can sound really harsh, and I don't mean it as such, but it's a collective way of being, those old energetic habits. So let's all hold the light for to understand the processes and choose to activate, choose to be in flow. You know, we talked in the workshop, didn't we, Stacey, about that place of what do you need to be? What do you need to be you? Yeah. What do you need to be you?
Yes.
What do you need from the cosmos? What do you need from your support networks? What do you need, most importantly, from yourself?
Right. That was a beautiful question. What do you need? Did you say it as like, what do you need from me to be fully you?
Yeah, both ways, okay. Isn't it? It's like,
what do I need?
Yeah.
To be fully me.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really beautiful question. So every day I ask myself, what do I need today from me to be me? And what does that mean? Does that mean me like have everything my heart desires? No, it means what is my purpose? If I think about my soul path, my life purpose, what do I need today to experience myself in my fullest? Because the only person who's going to ensure that I get what I need from me is me. That is nobody else's responsibility. And it doesn't matter whether I've got a super busy day, whether I'm doing things that maybe I don't even really enjoy, or whether I am living my happiest, most blissful day. What do I need today to be me? And from that place, I'm grounded, not only in my body system, which is really important for all outcomes of health, but in my soul system as well. So that's a question exactly, Stacey. And also we can expand it, yeah, to say, what do you need from me to be you? And that's a beautiful thing to bring into relationships, to bring into classrooms, to bring into friendships. What do you need from me to be you? Really beautiful, deep level questions.
And then listen to the answer within yourself or from another, but listen, even if it's something, really? I've never heard of, you know, that's so, but that's how we bring more uniqueness and originality to the world, is by listening. Well, I don't see this normally, but I'm going to go ahead and believe it and go for it anyway. Yeah. That's another, I would say, an ask to be more courageous in those ways, to create the world as it could be for all of us. Well, thank you so much for really sharing the way you see the world, because it's a gift to me for sure. And I know it will be to so many people. We did not get into the specific exercises and patterns, the infinities, you know, the so many beautiful practices that are easy to do. So, but what's great news is I'm going to share your book. Your Radiant Soul is a great resource, and that's easily ordered, and it's a fun book to read too. You can just, what I do is I just open it up, whatever shows itself, but it's also, you could also read it front to back. Lots of resources on YouTube. You're so generous with your practices and showing us all. And then I've joined something called The Gathering Ground, which I believe is about $20 a month or something like that, which we can join, which you send me things fairly regularly. Is that a good collection of how people can find the actual practices?
I think that's a fabulous collection of understandings of where people can go. Yes, thanks for sharing those, Stacey. And you know, the YouTube has been incredibly kind to me in being able to connect these practices and just ways of being around the world. And then The Gathering Ground is such a joy. That's a community several hundred strong now, where I go in regularly and share videos or just what I'm thinking. Just, it's my community. I love every person in there. So I get to kind of explore what's going on, what's showing up, where's the season at energetically. So those are the places that really delight me in working.
Beautiful. Well, thank you and blessings. And thank you for really opening us up to your understanding of this sea of beautiful energy in our life.
Oh, well, thank you, Stacey, and thank you for the amazing work that you're doing with helping that land feel beloved. It's powerful and, really tangible when we all get to experience that.
Well, take care, and I'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
That's a wrap for today's episode of Regenerative Spaces. If you found this episode valuable or thought-provoking, share it with a friend and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'll keep the conversation going over on Instagram, so join me at Stacey Pellice and share your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for future episodes. I love hearing from you. And before we go, your support means the world to me. If you have a moment, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help us reach even more people looking to spark sustainable change in our world. Stay curious, stay inspired, and until next time, this is Stacey Pellice, and you've been listening to Regenerative Spaces.